This is part two of our two-part series, introducing Maseches Zevachim, and now we're going to discuss for a few moments bird offerings. Bird offerings come from only two types of animals, either tur, which is a turtle dove, or b'nei yona, baby pigeons. There are also just two types of bird offerings, as opposed to the eight types of Zevachim. There's two types. There's an ola and a chatas. Now, in truth, the primary carbon here for birds is a chatas, which is brought in a few instances. Either if you're completing your tahara process, now you have to get full tahara from being a zav or a zava, people with, you know, mysterious emissions, or a metzora, the person who gets that skin affliction from antisocial behavior. Also a yoledis who can't afford a big animal will bring a bird as a chatas. And also we said those three variable chatas, olaviyorids, if a person conveys tuma to the mikdash or the kachem, if he suppresses testimony to help someone, if he basically swears falsely, so then he's supposed to bring a certain kind of sin offering for animals. If he can't afford it, he'll bring birds. So that means that the chatas comes for these various things, and it's always paired with an ola. Every time you bring a bird that's a chatas, you also bring not just the chatas, but also ola sa'of, and different kind of bird also. So they come in pairs typically. Kind of as a footnote, it is theoretically possible a person could just commit to bringing an ola sa'of if he wants to, a bird offering. But I think that's not the main point. That's a side point. The main point is a chatas comes with an of, with the ola, and so they go in pairs. And since they come in pairs, there's a possibility of them getting mixed up. We have all Maseches Kinim discussing with birds getting mixed up. So these birds, the chatas and the ola, they're offered in quite a different way than the zvachim, the other animals, the mammals. First of all, there's never smicha. There's no laying of weight on this tiny little bird. That would be possible anyways. Second of all, there's no shchita in the conventional sense, meaning shchita, which is, you know, taking a knife to ritually slaughter from the front of the neck, is not done to birds in the base of mikdash. It is done for fowl if you're going to eat like a chicken or a duck, but if you're going to do the base of mikdash, instead of shchita, it gets malika. Malika is the perforation of the bird's neck from the back of the neck. Instead of using a knife blade, the Kohen will use his right thumb fingernail, like a lengthened fingernail, and it'll perforate the bird from behind the neck, and then the simanim that are severed can be, if it's a chatas of one of the two, if it's ola, both of the two. The simanim again are the two pipes, the windpipe, also known as the trachea, or the kane, and the food pipe, also known as the esophagus, or the veshet. So the ola needs both severed, the chatas needs one severed, but it's done from behind. And then the blood isn't received in a kli sharis, not received into some sort of, you know, consecrated container for application on the Mizbeach. Rather, it's applied directly from the point of the Malika, which means the bird itself is brought to the Mizbeach, and then if it's an Ola, the blood essentially just is mitzvah. It's like pressed against, the neck is pressed against the altar. If it's an Ola, then it goes actually above the red line on the upper half. If it's a Chatas, it's below the red line, so these are now switched from Zevachim, the location. And when it's a chatas, there's also like sort of a spritzing of the blood, besides for the squeezing of the blood against the wall of the mizbeach. Okay, so that is the bird offerings. Now, as far as korbanos go, there's a whole world of high specificity, of great many details of how it has to be done, and if it's not done exactly right in all its various ways, then it becomes disqualified. So we have to talk about the various requirements, and since we're talking about something that is tremendous kedusha, sanctity, so then, as is the case with Jewish law in general, there's just ever more restrictions and qualifications and halakhic requirements. So first let's talk about the Kohen. Under normal circumstances, the Kohen is the primary actor in the bringing of the korbanos. The truth is that the smicha is always done by the Bailam, the owner, and the shechita, the slaughtering of the animal, could be done by anybody, not just a Kohen. So could be done by the Bailam, the person who brings the offering, could shecht it, his own offering, if he wants to. Okay, but shechita transforms an animal, which has just mere, we'll call it mere, kedushas aguf. It's consecrated intrinsically and designated to be an offering, to be a korban. After shechita, it now is a korban, okay? And a number of additional restrictions kick in. And from the time of Shechita onwards, everything must be done by the Kohen, meaning the Kabbalah, the receiving of the blood, Holacha, Zrika, all done by the Kohanim. And the meat isn't eaten by the Kohanim except for Kachim Kalim, in which case some of the meat's eaten by the Balaam as well, and some sinners. So, the Kohen, first of all, just by his very person, has to be very specific to not be to be eligible. First one has to be a, he has to be a bar mitzvah, of course. He has to be a male. There's no female Kohanim. He has to be a Kohen halachli, meaning he, that means he essentially is a descendant, a direct descendant of Aaron HaKohen through his fathers. He has to be blemish-free. There's a whole world of discussion about the, what are called mumin, blemishes, which invalidate a Kohen. So if he's missing a leg, let's say, for example, he certainly cannot be a Kohen. He certainly cannot do the avodah in the base of Mikdash, and that's true for all the mumin, as discussed in Maseches Bechoros. And he has to be circumcised, meaning even if for some reason, let's say his family or family of hemophiliacs, and they can't, he can't get circumcised, halachli, doesn't matter. At that point, he can't eat, he can't function, excuse me, as a in the base of English, doing the avodah. Second of all, he needs to be in a very specific state. That means, first of all, he has to be tahor. Any residual tum of any kind would make a kohen invalid to do the avodah. Second of all, he can't be an onen. That means he can't be, you know, in sort of that preliminary stage of, I'll call him mourning for lack of a better term, when right after a person's relative has died. He must be wearing the big day kahuna, so the specific four garments that a kohen is meant to wear. He must be wearing those and only those four garments. And he has to be barefoot. He can't wear shoes. His feet have to have direct contact with the floor of the Beis HaMikdash. He can't have drunk any wine. He can't have long hair. And he needs the preparation of washing his hands and feet with the water from the kior, the laver, that's there in the Beis HaMikdash. So those are all requirements for a Kohen to do the avodah. If he misses any of those, his service is invalid. Okay, so he did invalidate any korban. Now, in terms of the animals, there are also a number of specific restrictions. First of all, it has to be the correct type of animal, of course, which means, first of all, we said we're just cows, goats, and sheep, or birds. Second of all, there's some sort of specific, you know, specific types of, you know, it has to be male. If it's a, let's say it's a chatas, it's a female normally, etc. The animal itself has to have what I'll call a clean record. There's a number of the taryag mitzvahs that deal with specific invalidated animals. First of all, the animal can't be a roveya or nirva. I mean, it can't have so had some sort of like improper connection to a human being, like a bestiality. Second of all, it can't have been sort of an ancillary to avodah zarah. Can't have been worshipped or designated as a korban or offered, that kind of stuff, of course. It can't be what's called esnan zona, which sounds like sort of obscure, but it's one of the target mitzvahs. That is, if it was used as compensation to a prostitute for her services, then the sheep that was paid to the prostitute is not valid to be used as a korban. And finally, it can't be mechir kelev, if a person bartered his sheep for someone else's dog. So if it's used as payment for the dog, that sheep becomes invalid as a korban. Okay, that's the animal's, you know, basic restrictions. Now, the location is also essential. There are two prakim in Maseches Zevachim that discuss this issue. The basic point is what's called shchutei chutz. There's a prohibition against slaughtering and doing an avodah outside of the proper place. The proper place, for all intents and purposes, is the temple courtyard in Yerushalayim. There's only one option. There's no other. There's no plan B. Okay. So there's a penalty of karas if a person would shecht an animal, you know, outside of Yerushalayim for the sake of being a korban. There is a possibility of sometimes in Jewish history of what's called bamos. Bamos are essentially our private altars. And the 14th parak, the last parak of the Masechta, will discuss the details of that. But in short, ever since Shlomo HaMelech built the first Beis HaMikdash, there were no bamos for Jews allowed anymore, meaning that there's no possibility of a private altar or doing a vote outside of, in any way, outside of the Beis HaMikdash proper. Okay, now, the next thing, this is pretty interesting, are the intentions. There are unlike essentially the rest of Kol Torah Kula, where one's thoughts while he's doing a mitzvah don't really matter, meaning if you're eating matzah at your Leil Seder and you're thinking, this is so dumb and I look so stupid and it tastes terrible and I wish it had, you know, had risen, and like, does God care about me eating matzah anyways, and all the other wrong thoughts you might think, still, if you ate matzah at Leil Seder in response to mitzvah eating matzah, you're yotzi, your mitzvah. Okay, the thoughts don't invalidate the eating of the matzah. Maybe they'll take away from your schar, but they don't invalidate the eating. That's true for essentially kol Torah kula, the exception being karbonos, and really by extension tefillah. If you are davening Shmoneh Esrei, you would say the first paragraph not thinking you're talking to Hashem, so you're not yiltzi, but that's because tefillah is an extension of karbonos. Karbonos are unique in that they intentions matter, sort of a useful mnemonic. There are four specific intentions that are invalidating intentions, and they apply to any of the four steps of the blood of Voda, the Shechita, Kabbalah, Holacha, Zrika, and they are the topic of the first four prakam of our Masechta, so 444, easy to remember that, I guess. In terms of the disqualifying intentions, we should divide them into, there are four of them, into two groups of two. The first two are called Shelo Lishma and Shelo Lishem Baalim. Shelo Lishma means not for the sake of the particular korban. We said there are eight types of korbanos, so if the Kohen doing the Voda for a minute during either the Shechita, Kabbalah, Holacha, Zrika thinks, oh, this is going to be a Shlamim, really, it's an Ola. So, I mean, just he has a passing thought, just for a moment. He doesn't act on the thought. He says a passing thought and says, okay, I'm now going to go walk up the ramp and apply the blood on the four koronos. And he thinks, oh no, that's it's not a chatas, it's an Ola. Well, too late. He thought he was bringing Ola, a chatas for a second. Now he's invalidated the korban. It's no good anymore. I'll describe it in a second. And same goes Shelo Lishem Baal. It means if he thinks it's for the wrong person. So, for a moment, Reuven gave the korban to be offered as chatas for a moment while the Kohen is walking to the Mizbeach or daubing the blood. He thinks this is for Shimon. Oh no. So now he's now in disqualify the Korban. Now, in both of those cases, Shelo Lishma and Shelo Lishem Baalim, and I, for some reason, found this very hard to understand for many years. I don't know exactly know why now in retrospect, but hopefully I'll say it clearly so you won't have that thought. The Korban is valid, but the person bringing the Korban doesn't get credit. That means if, you know, in the middle of the Kohen doing his thing, he raises his hand and says, what do I do now? I had a momentary thought that this is an Ola, I'm really a Chatas. So the answer is, okay, proceed. I'm sorry, that was the wrong example. Let me say again. Person thinks, the Kohen raises his hand and says, I was going to do this as a Shlamim, but actually it's an Ola. Then the answer will be, okay, proceed. Do what you got to do. But the person who brought it won't get credit if he committed to bring that as, like, say, some sort of nether. He has to do it again. Okay, so he's not yotzi. So the korban proceeds, but the person who brought it isn't fulfilling his obligation. He'll have to bring a new korban, and that's true for both Shelo Lishma and Shelo Lishem Baalim, both of those two invalidations. The important exception, I actually stumbled when I said a moment ago, is the Chatas and the Pesach. The korban Chatas, korban Pesach, even if a person has Shelo Lishma thoughts, meaning for the wrong korban, or Shelo Lishem Baalim for the wrong person, now the korban is invalidated altogether, okay? And now should not be offered. Those are the first two. The second two invalidating thoughts are what's called chutz lezmano and chutz lemakomo, having in mind that the korban will be consumed in the wrong time or in the wrong place. Okay, when we say consumed, there really is two elements to the consumption of a korban. The mizbeach consumes the emurim, and at least, and if it's also the limbs, and the Kohen, and sometimes even the non-Kohen, but let's say Kohanim, consume the meat. Okay? If during the Shechita, Kabbalah, Holacha, or Zrika, those four essential steps of the processing of a Korban, the Kohen thinks for a fleeting moment, he doesn't carry out the thoughts, he just for a moment thinks, Chutz Lizmano thoughts, he thinks for a moment he will burn the Emurim, or he will eat the meat outside of the proper time, so then he has invalidated the korban. Not only that, he is what's called, that's called being mifagel. He creates the korban now becomes pigul, and it's totally not just invalid, but if one would now eat from this meat, he'd be chayev karis, a very severe penalty, right? So the point is, that's pigul applies if a person has chutz lezmano thoughts for the korban, even for a fleeting moment, for any of those four steps. Then there's the chutz l'makomo, the improper place. That means he thinks for a moment that he's going to eat this korban, you know, back in his house in Beit Shemesh instead of in the temple courtyard. Or he thinks he's going to burn the emurim, you know, in some pyre outside of, you know, the temple courtyard. So then those thoughts, even just for a second, again, invalidate the korban. Totally cannot be offered. It has to be burned outside of the base of English area. But unlike chutz lezmano, chutz lemakomo, if the wrong place as opposed to the wrong time, doesn't make pigul, and there's no penalty of karas, just a generic law of prohibition from eating that meat. So again, we have four invalidating thoughts, Shlishma, for the wrong kind of korban. Shlishem Bailim, for the wrong person it has in mind. It applies to any of the four essential steps. If those two happen, so then the korban proceeds, but the person doesn't get credit. The exceptions being the Chatas and the Pesach, which is the korban totally invalid. Then we have the other two thoughts, Chutz L'Zman and Chutz L'Makomo, the wrong time or wrong place. Those totally invalidate the korban. We do not proceed with it. And if it's chutz l'zmano thoughts, it's even worse, meaning the animal comes what's called pigle, and there's a penalty of karis if one eats that meat, which is not the case when it comes to chutz l'makomo, the wrong place, doesn't invalidate, but doesn't make it into pigle. Okay, now, after the animal's been shechted, like I said before, it transitions from being something which has been consecrated to be a korban, to what is actually, yes, a korban. And upon shechita, three new restrictions appear. Okay? We said yesterday that every korban has three essential, every zevach has three essential components, the blood, the imurim, the sacrificial parts, and the basar, the meat that's eaten. So these three restrictions kick in for all three of those types, those aspects of the korban. Okay? The three new restrictions are tuma, yotze, and lina. Tuma means that now the korban, blood, emurim, and meat are tuma susceptible potentially. The blood part's a little more complicated, but tuma susceptible. And if they become tummy, the whole thing is now, it's invalidated. Now, just understand, before when an animal's alive, there's no such, it's tuma impervious, right? If a living goat, cow, sheep touches a dead body, the living cow, goat, sheep remains tahor. But once it's been slaughtered, so now it's tuma susceptible. Once it's tummy, then you can't proceed anymore with it, okay? It's invalidated. Yotze means taking out of its proper place. So there's restrictions where you can offer the blood, the emurim, and the basar, and the point, which is basically the temple courtyard. And therefore, after the shechita, it's prohibited for even a moment to take the blood or the emurim or the meat outside of the temple courtyard. The small PS, yes, kachem kalim, the meat can be eaten inside Yerushalayim, so it can go there. But again, if you take it beyond those bounds, stick it outside the window in Yerushalayim, you've invalidated it, you cannot eat it anymore. So if you're having a Pesach Seder, and you stick your korban Pesach for a moment out the window, outside the windows, outside of Yerushalayim, you can't eat it after that, okay? And then there's lina. Lina is leaving over past the deadline. Lina technically often simply means like leaving overnight, and that's a general rule, but there's, in general, for when it comes to lina, as the third of the three new restrictions, it means leaving it undone past the deadline. So when it comes to blood, the deadline for offering the blood is that day by sundown. Okay, if you're talking about the emurim, it's really, you have until essentially dawn of the next morning to burn them. And when it comes to eating the meat, so it's either 1 day or 2 days. I described it yesterday. Typically, it's 1 day, meaning you have until the dawn of the next day after you offered it. And if it's a shlamim, you have until the sundown of the next day. Okay, but the point is, you can't leave the blood or the emurim or the meat unoffered or eaten or burned. And if you do, so then that's called lina, that's the crime, and it turns it into what's called nosar. So nosar is the consequences of lina. Lina means leaving it past the deadline. Nosar means like leftovers past the deadline. So once its deadline is passed, that blood or emurim or meat becomes nosar and can no longer be eaten or offered or burned. Now, worth noting, if the blood made it to the mizbeach in the proper time, and then you just leave over meat past the deadline, so then the meat is nosar, but the korban was yes effective. As long as the blood got the mizbeach in the proper time, the korban is yes effective. Okay, so these three things, tuma, or tame, yotze, and lina, are the new restrictions that crop up after shechita. Sometimes pigle, tame, and nosar are lumped together because pigle, tummy, and nosar all carry with them penalty of karis if one eats the meat from that time. Okay, but again, so it could be that the meat it becomes restricted, or even the emurim becomes restricted, and you can't offer it or eat it anymore, but the korban itself was effective as long as the blood got there without other disqualification. Okay, so that's essentially the restrictions that come with korbanos in general. Now, the last thing I want to say before we wrap up here is just an overview of the structure of Maseches Zvachim. So, Zvachim is 14 chapters, so it's a pretty big Masechta. The first four deal with those for invalidating or disqualifying intentions. Okay, those are the first four prakim. We discussed where they were, but I'll just remind you again. Shlo Hashma, Shlo Hashem Bailim, Chutz Lazman, Chutz Lamakomo. That's the topic of the first four prakim. Then the fifth and sixth prakim discuss like the procedures for offering of a sacrifice. The fifth is about behemos, cow, goat, sheep, those eight types. Okay, and then the sixth is about ophos, birds. The seventh goes back to ophos, and it talks about the improper intentions that come with bird offerings. Again, remember, because you don't have like a shechita and a kabbalah, etc., for birds, it's a little different. The eighth chapter talks about what happens when sacrificial parts get mixed up. The ninth part talks about what happens if you wrongly put invalid or disqualified parts of a korban, like the emurim, etc., on the mizbeach. So it's there's two possibilities. It's im alu lo yardu. If you put it up, you don't take it down. And that'll be true for some scenarios and other scenarios, which are like more fundamental. Im alu yardu, even if you put it up, you will remove it from the altar. So it depends. And when you do remove it, once it's put up there in air or not, is discussion of the ninth perek. Tenth perek talks about the proper order, like the hierarchy of procedure, which goes first, which goes second, if you have multiple korbanos to bring. The 11th talks about the blood of the chatas and also like the utensils in which a kachem are cooked and those restrictions that kick in and how to deal with those issues. The 12th talks about how you divided up the apportionment of the meat from the korbanos and the hides. Remember, every ola has an animal hide, even though the animal's burned, but though there's still like the skin. Every kohen wants to put new upholstery in his Mercedes, so therefore he'll want the hides. So how you divide up the hides, how that works, who gets it. The 13th parak talks about shchutei chutz, the slaughtering of the animals outside the Beis Mikdash proper. And the 14th parak talks about the historically, so to speak, when bamos were okay and when not, and how that would work back then, private altars outside of the Beis Mikdash. Okay, so that's the structure and content of essentially of the scope of the Masechta, of Masechta Zvachim. And now, Be'ez Hashem, we will begin the Masechta in earnest, Masechta Zvachim, Parak Aleph, Mishnah Aleph.